Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia? Solartopia, Solartopia.
So we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Well, we multiplied, we needed more. The rich got rich, got so the fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have Solartopia, Solartopia.
So they gave nuclear power a try. This is Harvey Wasserman back with another Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. That was Pete Seeger, David Burns, and Dar Williams with Rivertown Kids singing the Grammy Award winning Solartopia theme song, certainly dedicated in honor of the great Pete Seeger. And it's just we got a really killer show today. It's kind of moving. Well, where to start? What happens now is that we're going to deal with one of the biggest issues of our time. We've been talking a lot about Fukushima on the show. We've had some really great and important guests and experts and activists to talk about Fukushima. And now, as always happens with huge issues, something really important has come up. It is the irradiation of the USS Ronald Reagan, a 4 billion plus American aircraft carrier stationed in the Pacific. It's at the core of the Pacific Fleet, as a matter of fact. And as it turns out, and many of you may have seen my posts, I have an article up today at numerous websites, EcoWatch, Free Press, Common Dreams, Counterpunch, numerous others have been carrying the story, that a new lawsuit has been filed involving 79 crew members of the USS Ronald Reagan who were irradiated in the midst of the Fukushima disaster. They were in Japanese waters on a humanitarian mission called Tomodachi to help the Japanese people recover from the earthquake and tsunami that killed thousands of people and did billions of dollars worth of damage. But the crew members of the and even the Prime Minister of Japan were not fully informed of the fact that Fukushima Daiichi site with 6 commercial atomic reactors on it was in the middle of the worst nuclear accident in the history of the human race. And by the time the Reagan was there, at least Unit 1 was in advanced stages of melting down and spewing out God knows how much radiation. We are honored today to talk about this, and I do hope you'll track down the piece at nukefree.org and freepress.org, and especially ecowatch.org, which originated it, and to see what's been happening with the petitioning and the filing of the lawsuit among the sailors. So I'm going to actually defer. We are honored to have the two principal attorneys for this class action suit and one of the plaintiffs. Steve Simmons is with us, a sailor from the USS Reagan. Paul Garner and Charles Bonner are the two of the principal attorneys on the case. Paul, can you identify yourself, Paul Garner?
Yes, this is Paul Garner, and I want to thank you so much, Harvey, for shedding light on this whole unfortunate man-made situation.
It's a devastating story. Absolutely devastating story. I have kids around the same age as some of the sailors, and it's just heart-wrenching. Charles Bonner, you're with us.
I am with you, Harvey. Thank you also for informing the world to the dangers of this this nuclear power energy. It's not what the world needs, and this Fukushima disaster is just an example of what is not needed on the planet.
Right, and Charles, you are in the Bay Area, and Paul, you are in San Diego. Is that correct?
That's correct. This is Paul, and we have a office in Carlsbad in San Diego, which is not too far from the federal courthouse where we filed the case.
Okay, and we also are joined by one of the sailors, one of the plaintiffs in this case, Steve Simmons. Are you with us?
I am here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for all the three of you for joining us. We're honored. And Steve, are you with us just for the half hour? Are you going to be on the whole show? Do you have a time constraint?
I am here as long as you need me.
All right, very, very good. So what I'd like to do then, Steve, if you don't mind, is start with the attorneys and let them, Paul and Charles, take it as you will, and Charles Bonner in the San Francisco Bay Area and Paul Garner in San Diego area. If you will explain, please, this lawsuit, and then if you'll introduce Steve, that would be really terrific. So Paul and Charles, jump in here,
this
please.
This is Paul. I just want to introduce Steve. He was a career naval officer serving aboard the Reagan, who you will hear was in the prime of health before being exposed to radiation during this mission. And now he's wheelchair-bound and needs medical care. The good news, if there is any good news, is that, as I understand it, and he can, tell us about this, the Department of Defense has given him a 100% disability that's work-related. They don't necessarily say that it's radiation-related, but at least they're not saying it isn't. So they're giving him 100% disability. That would be a great start for he and the other victims of this terrible tragedy. So he can speak for himself. Charles, I'm going to defer to you to explain the core of this complaint that we filed on behalf of the entire class.
Yes, this lawsuit is a class action lawsuit on behalf of 70,000 affected U.S. servicemen and women and their families. There was initially 24,000 sailors who responded from the 7th Fleet. 5,500 were on the USS Ronald Reagan. These sailors and service personnel went in to provide humanitarian aid. They went in to take food and water and to rescue people. They did not go in to fight radiation, and indeed, TEPCO concealed from them that there were these massive radiation releases. No one knew, as the Prime Minister of Japan at the time, Prime Minister
Kan.
Kan.
Prime Minister Nato Kan was the pro-nuclear leader of Japan, the elected leader of Japan, at the time that Fukushima happened, the meltdowns and explosions at the Fukushima Daiichi, and of course in the middle of the earthquake and tsunami. And he has testified that he was not fully informed by the Tokyo Electric Power Company as to what was happening at Fukushima during the disaster.
That is correct. And Nato Kan admitted here just recently in December that, contrary to what people thought, which is that the meltdown occurred 2 days after the earthquake on March 12th, the true fact, which was concealed from him, is that the meltdown occurred 5 hours after the earthquake. Now, this fact, this very important fact, was totally concealed and hidden from the sailors, from the commanders on the wrong rig. And so they had to literally discover this release of radiation the hard way. And as one of the sailors described, they were literally running for their lives once they encountered these plumes. So this lawsuit is, you know, has as this theme, what is in the best interest of these sailors who went in as good Samaritans, and now they're all sick with various illnesses such as leukemia, thyroid cancer, testicular cancer, and a host of other illnesses. And so this lawsuit is to try to get compensation to establish a medical fund for them so that they can be taken care of for the rest of their lives, and their offsprings can be taken care of. As we well know, radiation exposure causes genetic mutation and affects the offspring. So that is what this lawsuit is about.
And it was first filed in December of 2012. Is that correct?
That's
when
correct.
When was the lawsuit first filed?
December 21st, 2012, the end of the world on the Mayan calendar.
And that was purposeful that we filed it that day.
Daryl Brooks and I filed it. We, on behalf of 8 sailors, including the baby whose mother was Avantra Sommer, but she didn't know it at the time. And we know, and you know, Harvey, the effect on fetuses, especially on women more than men, but then you add the fetus in, and that just vacuums it up. And none of these people received any intervention after their exposure. They weren't given potassium iodide during the event or after the event, except for a few handful who flew the helicopters or the jets on reconnaissance. But just to emphasize what Charles just said, Naoto Kan, he didn't testify, but he appeared before the Japanese foreign press, and he said, and he measured it in his words, that the core meltdown of reactor number 1 happened 5 hours after the earthquake, not the tsunami. The earthquake was at 2:46 p.m. local time.
And when did the tsunami hit?
The tsunami hit about 43 minutes after the quake. But there were releases of radiation as a result of the quake. There was eyewitnesses who said they saw the steam and venting and pipes broken, and, you know, it got shook pretty good.
Yes, and there's an industry denial.
The radioisotopes are released on day 1. On day 2, the Reagan strike force arrives. Hey, tell the fire department, get some special equipment before you come in on humanitarian mission. You know, that's the fraud. That's the deception. That's the misrepresentation. That's the Fukushima gate by this entity, Tokyo Electric Power Company, INC, which is now being propped up by the government of Japan. Billions of dollars. How about dedicating some of those billions to the Tomodachi, your friends, who went in there to try to help the poor vanquished people of Japan? That's the question.
Okay, so now you have sued on behalf of Steve Simmons and other Navy vets from the Reagan and from other ships. There was the Essex and a number of other ships in the area, and that were exposed to radiation from Fukushima. Your initial lawsuit in December of 2012 had 8 sailors, plaintiffs, and you're now up to 79, is that correct, plus 2, the infant of one of the sailors who was pregnant at the time, and then a teenager who lived nearby, an American teenager who lived in Yokosuka, which was also irradiated, is that correct?
At a base, yes, at a base with his father. So he's come down with a rare form of leukemia that he has to be treated for. They have no family history, and there are consequences that have flowed to these people. And so the exact number is still to be determined. We're getting contacted every single day by more and more people who say, "Oh, geez, I didn't know that my bleeding was related to this. I have, and my other, my breakdown of my immune system, and the whole Chernobyl effect." And most people aren't aware of it because the mass media hasn't been on top of this story. And thankfully, you are.
Well, of course, we expect that from the mass media, and I will say that what I've read the complaint, and the symptoms that are being described and that I've heard from you and paraphrased in the press release are very similar to what we heard and witnessed at Three Mile Island after the 1979 meltdown, and certainly in the Chernobyl region after that 1986 explosion. Now we've had three meltdowns and four explosions at Fukushima. How close was the Ronald Reagan, the USS Ronald Reagan? And let's set the stage here. The USS Ronald Reagan is one of the biggest ships in the world, $4.3 billion to build. It is an aircraft carrier with some 80 aircraft on it, 5,500 crew members, for God's sakes, and Steve Simmons is one of them. We'll talk with him in a minute. And how close did it actually get to the Fukushima Daiichi site in the midst of this disaster?
Hey, Steve Simmons, you were there.
Correct, I was. I have not been told exact distances. I know that we were within miles of the coast of Japan, to the point where we sat in a nuclear plume for over 5 hours at one point, as well as sucked up the contaminants of the water system into the ship's water.
Could you see Fukushima Daiichi at any time?
Myself, personally, I never did. Of course, outside, I know a lot of people were talking about everything, all the debris that they saw floating by, all the debris that was in the water, from cars to homes, you name it, they were seeing it out there.
What indicated to you that you were in a radioactive plume?
That was actually told to us.
By?
It came across the what they call the 1MC, or the ship's intercom system, that we had entered. And it's also in the ship's deck logs.
Wow. They announced to you on the Reagan that you were in a radioactive plume?
It was announced that we had come across the nuclear, the radiated plume.
But just to be clear, that wasn't on day one, was it?
I don't recall it was day one, but I'm not certain on that.
Because we know, Harvey, this is Paul, we know the coordinates of where the Reagan entered the plume and exited the radioactive plume on that occasion and was in the plume for 5 hours.
Where are the readings coming from, the radioactive readings? Who did the readings that would indicate that they were in a radioactive plume, do you know?
The Reagan is equipped with, once they get it up and running, for external, examination rather than concern about the two reactors that power it. They said, this doesn't look good when the helicopters came back and they were contaminated. And that was on day one after they arrived. They started ferrying in supplies, water, blankets, food, and they understand the ray. You understand it. This supercarrier is 3 football fields long for its deck. If you stood it on end, it would almost reach to the top of the Empire State Building. And it carries a crew of 5,500, and it relies upon a desalinization process to provide water to the crew. So they, as far as I know, and based upon people we've spoken with, they never dropped anchor. They just cruised around in and out, waiting for the helos to come back, launching. Then the helos come back. Whoops, the sensors went off on the helos on the way back. They landed. They said, okay, we've got to decontaminate them. So they started washing them down with soap and water, but they didn't know it at the time, but the only water they could rely upon was seawater, and that was heavily contaminated at the time.
Oh, my God. So let's clarify this. You're saying that they started, they tried to decontaminate
weeks. This
radioactive helicopters with radioactive water.
Sorry for interrupting. Steve, you can pick up from there if you wish.
You were doing a pretty good job there.
Well, Steve, what was your job on the boat? Where were you stationed on the Reagan, USS Ronald Reagan?
My job, I was actually the administrative officer for the air wing that was embarked. So my office, everything, I would say 95% of my dealings the entire time I was on the Reagan was on the O3 level, which for those who are definitely not aware of what the O3 level, that's the level right below the flight deck. So anybody that enters or exits the flight deck, that's exactly where they're coming from, is from the O3 level.
The Reagan is a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, so there must have been some kind of radiological detection equipment on the boat. Is that right?
I would assume so, primarily down in those particular engineering spaces.
And did they have equipment for, and anybody can answer this, did they have equipment on the boat for detecting radioactive contamination anywhere on the boat?
Oh, yes. They had counters. They had Geiger counters. They had dosimeters. The people who regularly worked around the reactors on the Reagan had dosimeters on every day. That was an everyday experience because they were concerned about that. It was, you know, they felt that could pose a threat to human safety. But, you know, without going into what the capabilities of the Reagan were on March 11th, 2011, having been built while he was still alive, you know, it goes back. It was one of the oldest workhorses in the fleet. So I would suggest that they, from what we've heard from people who were there, they had set up places along the ship where they would prevent people from going through because they had detected contamination there. But whether they recorded that remains unclear, because some people say that they were just told to take readings but not make any record of it.
But they did have
whatever
indication.
Deficiencies there were in their detection equipment. They found out on the helicopters before it reached the Reagan, but then the helicopters reached the Reagan, and so did all that backwash. And then you start pouring it on the deck, you know, and it's going into the water system, into the ventilation system. It's going into people who were, like Steve will tell you, you know, what he was doing when he heard, hey, Houston, we got a problem here.
Well, Steve, you were involved with the aircraft coming in and out. How did you discover that the helicopters that were coming back from delivering humanitarian aid to the stricken regions of Japan near the Fukushima reactors, how did you find out that they were contaminated?
Well, the way I heard about the aircraft being contaminated is because that was widely announced. You know, what Paul was mentioning about Houston, there's a problem. And like I had mentioned as well, aside from sitting in that nuclear plume, is, you know, we did suck up contaminants into the water system of the ship, and some spots, you know, some of the all that seawater goes everywhere throughout the ship, whether it's soda machines for cooking, showers, toilets, water fountains, everything. Some of it goes through a
desalinization.
Correct. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Sometimes I'm having issues here. And other parts of it just uses straight seawater, just like Paul was mentioning with the fire, like the hosing down of the flight deck. So at one point, we had actually sucked up the contaminants, and I had already been awake, showered, had already been forward and had some breakfast, had some water to drink, a couple glasses, in fact, and filled up my water bottle and had already proceeded to my office when they came across, the 1MC and indicated that we did bring up contaminants into the water system and had to secure the water for a period of time so they could work on trying to get it all filtered out.
So did they tell you to stop drinking water and stop bathing when they announced on the intercom that there was radiation in the system?
Correct. They secured all the water on the ship at that point until they could figure out exactly what they needed to do to.
And how? Get it how out long of did you go without water?
Honestly, I couldn't tell you. Being that it was 3 years ago, I honestly couldn't tell you exactly how long it was.
Okay, so let's set the stage here. You're just below flight deck. Did you have any windows in your office?
No. Okay, I didn't have any windows in my office. The space I worked out on all the time, though, was an exposed weather deck.
I think we usually take a break here, but I'm not going to break if that's okay in New York. We're going to stay with this because this is about as important a story as there is right now in the world today. Steve Simmons, we're talking with Steve Simmons. Steve, what was your rank? What was your official title on USS Ronald Reagan?
My official title was I was the administrative officer for the air wing, for the carrier air wing that was on board.
And did you have a rank?
At the time, I was an ensign. It was my first tour as a commissioned officer. I was enlisted for 12 and a half years prior to that.
Wow. And where did you go for your training?
Which part of the training, actually? Because there's been a lot.
Just tell us where you were trained in general for the Navy here for your position. You were in the Navy for 12 years.
I'm at 16 years now.
And how old are you now?
You're a lieutenant, aren't you?
Say, what's that?
You are a lieutenant, aren't you, Steve?
Correct, lieutenant junior grade, yep.
Okay. So you're still in the Navy?
For about another 2 months until I get my official retirement papers.
Had you intended on being, so I guess you'd intended on being a career officer in the Navy?
Oh, absolutely. I had hopes of doing a 30 plus years.
And do you have a family?
I do, a wife and 3 kids.
And you're stationed in San Diego?
I am actually in Maryland right now.
Okay, but when you were with the Reagan, you were stationed in San Diego, is that correct?
I was stationed in Lemoore. I was with the Air Wing up there in the Central Valley.
Of California?
Correct, yep.
Okay, so you're on, and this was your first tour on the Reagan, is that correct?
It was my first deployment as a commissioned officer.
And it must have been, to be on a ship with 5,500 people must be amazing. You were dispatched to the coast of Japan, I suppose with materials, blankets, other supplies to help the people in the earthquake and tsunami. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And they were being taken in by the helicopters off the Ronald Reagan.
And yep, they were using the helos that we had on board because we were out there. It was already a scheduled deployment. We were getting ready to participate in some exercises, and then we got diverted from that and sent up north to help assist Japan.
Did you have any idea when you headed towards the Sea of Japan, or the seas off Japan, actually, the Pacific coast of Japan, that there was anything going on at the nuclear plants?
Well, we knew that the earthquake and tsunami had ravaged the shores, and we knew that they were having some issues with the plant as far as the severity of it. You know, nobody truly knew the full scope of what was going on.
And were there, and when they told you that that there was radiation coming from the nuclear plants, they did this to advise you to not drink the water or bathe in the water, is that correct?
At the time they secured the water, of course, they didn't want anybody drinking it or using it. But when we were told that there is radiation coming from the plant, it had been explained multiple times that, at least to us, based on the information that was fed to the leadership, I would say, based on that information that was coming from TEPCO in Japan, it had been explained to us that there was no risks, that there was no hazards associated with it. In fact, that you can receive a higher dose of radiation from either a transcontinental flight or from 1 month supply of rock, sun, and background radiation from rock, sun, and soils. So
they told you this over the intercom?
Oh, they went around. They went around and told everybody.
So they said there was no danger, but on the other hand, don't drink the water or bathe in it.
Correct. So, and you know, they're simply going off the information being fed to them. So from, if information is incorrect.
Charles and Paul, the attorneys, do you know who was informing the Navy as to what was going on here?
Well, the Navy had to know.
This is, as you explained, a multi-billion-dollar aircraft carrier with 5,500 aboard, plus all the other support vessels, the Cowpens, the Germantown, the Essex, the Preble, the missile sweepers. Everything goes in there to lend humanitarian aid. So, you know,
Here's the question, Harvey.
Okay, Captain Burke of the Reagan, a decorated captain, please get him to answer you. Would you have knowingly exposed that equipment and your support, and all the people aboard, had you known that there was a meltdown of unit number one hours before you came in there? Ask him this. Did anyone bother telling you that the TEPCO people who were on the scene at the nuclear power plant sent a fax through to the government in Tokyo, that man in charge, who's now dead from cancer, sent a fax through saying two things. One, the backup pumps are working, the cooling system seems to be operational, and it's engaged. None of the above was true. They didn't even know that the switch was turned off. So they thought, oh, yeah, it's cooling down. They were in a LOCA. That's a loss of coolant accident in the industry, as you know. And they send a misrepresentation through to their headquarters in Japan where they want to know what's going on there. And Prime Minister Naoto Kan explained Plan B for him, had they not been able to stop the eventual meltdown of three reactors there, which could and probably would have gone much further for, you know, because they had so many other reactors that would just fall into place, that he didn't want to have to evacuate one-third of Japan, including Tokyo, shut down Tokyo for one day. What happens to
Charles Bonner, do you want to add into what Paul is telling us here?
Well, yes. The detectors on the ship clearly started picking up radiation when the helicopters started coming back. They were changing the engines on the helicopters and sending helicopters back. What was unknown was the level of the release. TEPCO was sending out false information. TEPCO had this mantra that, one, there was no meltdown. Two, everything was under control. While they were concealing that there was a hydrogen explosion, there was a massive radiation release, which they did not accurately calculate. Even now, just recently, TEPCO has admitted that their calculations were wrong. Of course,
By a factor of five.
So here you have TEPCO communicating information to the United States government, to the Reagan, that they now admit was wrong. So we don't really know how much radiation was really released, how much radiation people like Steve, Officer Simmons there, and the other plaintiffs were exposed to, because TEPCO has consistently lied and consistently conspired, and now they're consistently denying their responsibility. So the Reagan, again, attempted to avoid the radiation that they were taken on by moving to other locations, and Lieutenant Simmons can speak to this. But each time they would move to a new location, they would get another plume of radiation. And one of the plaintiffs described this experience as, in the middle of a snowstorm, as having this warm wave come over her and having this metallic taste in their mouth like aluminum foil. But we know that these are classic indications of radiation exposure and radiation releases.
Okay, but, now I've been with the nuclear issue for 40 years, and I just can't even begin to you know, this is just so horrible. I was in Three Mile Island a year after the accident. I interviewed people there. They talked about the metallic taste that came from Three Mile Island. We read in the accounts of the bombing of Hiroshima that the pilots who dropped the bomb in the Enola Gay flying away also had a metallic taste. And, you know, this is just horrifying. We're talking with Paul Garner and Charles Bonner, the attorneys for a class action lawsuit filed, on behalf of now 79 sailors and two children who were exposed, American sailors and American children, who were exposed to radiation from the Fukushima disaster. Steve Simmons, you were a crew member of the Reagan, Ronald Reagan. Can you tell us, how did you know when the ship was sailing away, trying to get away from Fukushima, how did you know that you kept sailing into additional clouds of radiation?
Well, actually, that's a new piece of information that I'm just finding out about. I knew about the initial plume that is annotated in the decalogue, copy of the decalogue that I had seen, but the additional plumes, that's actually new information to me.
But the first plume that the Reagan flew into, that is officially logged in the decalogue of the ship?
It is. It's in the decalogue. They have it listed as far as what time they entered the plume and what time they exited the plume.
Yeah.
And Charles,
yes. Captain Burke sent an email out in May of 2011 admitting that 17 crew members had been irradiated, but, you know, sort of indicating that he didn't think the radiation was at any harmful level. But obviously that was spoken out of ignorance, because there's no way he could have known the level of the radiation that was being released, since TEPCO concealed it. But they've admitted...
They want them to speak out of ignorance, because it's part of the overall... This is Paul. It's part of the overall game plan, which is to just take the ostrich technique, like they did with the nuclear navy in the 50s, with the above-ground testing, with the dumping of debris, with, well, let's just dump it in the ocean. I mean, we'll take it out west, we'll take it to Hanover, and we'll take it out of the Reagan. You know, Daryl Brooks and I went up to Bremerton to visit the Reagan while it was up in dry dock. Did I lose you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well,
that's Bremerton, Washington.
The truth is, during that time, they were trying to contaminate the vessel. Now, I think it's not speaking out of school to say that we are assessing how we can help these victims. It's not about Paul Garner and Charles Bonner, two lawyers, plus a lot of assistants who want to promote a class action for their own ulterior motives.
Yes, all right, so anyone who believes that,
we're not going to dissuade them, Harvey. But here's the truth. They brought Secretary of the Navy Mavis aboard towards the end of Operation Tomodachi, so that Burke and others, they could devise a game plan. The story, you should ask Captain Burke, when he sent out that email, had he taken potassium iodide? I mean, how are you feeling, Captain Burke? And you wonder about Secretary of the Navy Mavis, you know?
Okay, so let me update us iodide? Here.
Did they do anything?
Give us a hand
here. So here's the point. Here's
Charles,
the point.
Did you want to jump in and say something?
We want to help these people. We're working with world-renowned doctors who want to undertake to help all of these victims to de-incorporate the hot particles that Steve Simmons and so many others have ingested to their detriment, which has caused the panoply of problems that you have spoken so eloquently about. And thank you again for posting those petitions and raising awareness throughout the world. There's got to be a stop put to this Fukushima Gate cover-up. the nuclear power costs a lot more than they would have us believe in terms of human life, in terms of our genetic makeup, in terms of fish caught off the west coast of California. By the way, and you know this, Hillary Clinton inked a deal with Japan that we would buy all of the radioactive tuna and seafood and other products before she left office.
And, well, let's that's an interesting.
I don't want to go on a tangent here.
Paul, let me ask you, Charles.
We can help these people. We're FukushimaRadiationVictims.net. Charles and I have a website up, FukushimaRadiationVictims.net.
And will you post the text of the action to help these victims,
all 70,000.
If you will post the text of the action on that suit, that would be very helpful, because I have been posting articles and have been unable to post a location where people can look at the actual filing. Charles Bonner, can you tell us how radioactive is the Reagan right now? Where is it, and is it usable? Or some people have actually argued that the Navy should take it out and sink it. What have you found out about this?
Yeah, this is the other sad thing about this entire case. Not only do we have these American sailors, young men and women in their 20s, completely having their health wrecked and facing life-threatening illnesses, we have billions and billions of dollars of American equipment, including the Reagan, that is now either out of commission or should be taken out of commission. The Reagan is sitting in the port there in San Diego. It has allegedly been decontaminated, but there's huge questions as to whether or not it's fit. They have a graveyard of jet engines and helicopter engines that are completely out of commission now. We've spoken to many of the plaintiffs who were working on the deck, and they're the ones who reported to us that the ship moved to abort the plumes, and each time that they would move the ship, they would encounter another plume. There's a huge question as to whether or not the Reagan is able to go back into commission, whether it's able to go back to sea, or whether it's still contaminated. I believe it is still contaminated because it's hard to get rid of that kind of radiation.
The people that we spoke with who were involved in the decontamination process, Harvey, have told us that they weren't able to get all the contamination because there's so many. It's like a floating hotel. Come on.
Yeah.
Nooks and crannies. It gets into everything, into the, places where the doorways are, the hatches are, and everything else. They couldn't afford to retrofit that whole thing. So you know what he told them? Us that he was ordered to do, just paint it, give it a new paint job. So
well, now they said there is history with this. After the
Bremerton back to Coronado, then it was anchored at Coronado. Charles and I saw it there last November. It's still there, as far as we know. And
now there is a history with this. Paul Garner and
someone
Charles
said,
Garner,
"Hey, do you think this is proper to have kindergarten kids go aboard this vessel? You know, considering what it's been through, you know, and expose them." And then suddenly, we hear there's going to be a redeployment announced. The Reagan's going back to Japan. And the Washington that's over in Japan, that's radioactive, part of the group, is going to Virginia. And they're going to put a new carrier in San Diego. Now, I'm a San Diego guy, and when a vessel isn't there, it costs the city millions of dollars because you got all the people who are attached to the vessel and then all their families and everything else. So
it's Paul Garner and Charles
Bobby
Bonner
Kennedy
of the class action
with a hotel
here
in L.A.
Hold on.
Let's send the Reagan back to Japan, give it a good dose of radiation, because they're still releasing, they admit, to 300 metric tons of radioactive water into the Pacific every day. And we'll give it a good dose, and then we'll just say, hey, who knows, it's all background. Steve Simmons has described background radiation. They say, hey, go eat a banana, you'll get more radiation. I would suggest to these naysayers that they rule out radiation as having been a cause, either in whole or in part, of Steve's situation right now. And it just has to be by a measure of a little more than 50%. And those in the know who've been on your show realize that there's no safe level of radiation. Why do you think when you go to a dentist to get your teeth x-rayed, they put that, you know, lead apron across you? If it's not harmful, it's cumulative. Yeah, well, why does
Paul,
Joe Mangano and Dr. her name escapes her right now, talking about how many deaths are related to the release of that plume that the Reagan went through that ended up on the West Coast?
Okay, so Paul Garner, you've been speaking on behalf of the class action suit here, filed on behalf of the crew members of the Ronald Reagan. Charles Bonner, you're in the Bay Area, also an attorney. Can you add into this? And then I want to get back to Steve Simmons, who was a crew member.
Yes, I just wanted to bring to everyone's attention that this particular disaster that occurred on March 11, 2011, was not TEPCO's first negligent act. TEPCO has had a history of causing various radiation release going back to 1981. In 1981, there were 300 workers exposed to excessive levels of radiation. In December of 1995, they had another release. In March of 97, 37 workers were exposed to radiation. In September of 99, there were hundreds of people exposed, including two of whom who died from radiation exposure. In 2000, again, TEPCO had leaks in various pipings. 2002, again, another release. So TEPCO has shown that they are incapable, they are totally incapable of operating this nuclear power plant in a safe way. And we've drafted a settlement letter that is going out today to TEPCO's lawyers, inviting them to select a federal magistrate judge to sit down and have this judge essentially mediate a resolution of Tabby Sailor's case so that we don't have to get into a protracted war. Because as you had mentioned earlier, Harvey, this case started off with 12 sailors. Then it was elevated to 51 when we filed our First Amendment complaint in June of 2013. And now we've just filed for 80 sailors. And since we filed on February 6th, just last week, I now have another 30. We have another 30 sailors who contacted us, each of whom have some kind of medical issue. So the numbers continue to increase, and they're not just from the Reagan, but they're from several of the ships. But what's interesting in terms of the causation here, the fact that so many of these sailors are from the Reagan, which only had 5,500 sailors, but yet we have this excessive number of young 20-year-olds and early 30-year-olds who are now suffering from illnesses such as testicular cancer, thyroid cancers, leukemias, that you don't see in this population of young people. You do see it, however, when you look at Chernobyl and Three Mile Island and other places where there's been a radiation exposure. But if you look at a population on any of the other ships with the same number of sailors, you don't see this big bell curve of illnesses. Instead, it's unusual. So here we have a cluster of illnesses that essentially proves the causation that Steve Simmons is experiencing right now. So we would like to immediately get help for these sailors, and that's what we're inviting TEPCO to do.
Lieutenant Steve Simmons. Lieutenant Steve Simmons, what do you want to tell people about what's happened to you and what you think is involved here with this case?
Seek treatment to deincorporate. Thank you.
Steve Simmons, what would you like to tell us about what's happened with you and your tenure on the Reagan?
I don't want to say it's complicated, but, the things that I've been through over the past little over, you know, a little over 2 years. Later this year will be 3 years since everything started for me. It's not something that, number one, I would wish upon anybody, and it's not something that you would expect to see in somebody who's in their, you know, their mid-30s, who's used to being active, who's used to doing things that I used to do, such as P90X workouts, Insanity workouts. The summer before that deployment, I was in Hawaii hiking Diamond Head, followed the next day by Stairway to Heaven. So I was, you know, trying to stay physically active, and then you go from that kind of condition to having to depend upon a wheelchair to get around, or having to use catheters to empty your bladder every 4 hours. You know, these are things that you don't wish upon anybody.
No, you don't. Now, my understanding, Paul, and thank you very much, Steve. Thank you for sharing. I know how much it's, how difficult it must be to talk about this. We've been talking with Steve Simmons, Lieutenant Steve Simmons of U.S. Navy, a crew member of the USS Ronald Reagan, when the ship was near Fukushima Daiichi during the worst of the accident. I believe a four-day deployment, as best we can tell. It was then sailing inadvertently as it was trying to get away into one radioactive cloud after another. Of course, this is all denied by the Tokyo Electric Power Company and to a certain extent by the U.S. Navy. I'm talking also with Paul Garner and Charles Bonner, the attorneys for the class action suit. It was refiled yesterday in the federal court in San Diego. I have a piece on it at ecowatch.com, nukefree.org, Common Dreams, Counterpunch, and a number of other places. We only have a few more minutes, Paul and Charles. I do want to emphasize that the issue of the continued contamination of the Ronald Reagan, a $4.3 billion ship, is relevant to what we learned during the bomb testing in the 1950s and 60s. There was a very large test, Iron Mike, as well as others in the South Pacific. They tested to see what would happen to the boats. They put the ships very close to the explosions. The ships actually didn't sink, much to their amazement. They were very buoyant, but they were unable to sight, and they put many, many thousands of sailors on the case scrubbing these ships down, and they were unable to decontaminate them. Do we have a parallel experience, Charles and Paul, with the Reagan? Do we have any evidence of how radioactive the USS Reagan might be now?
Well, I'm sorry. This is Paul. I'll just say briefly. You hit it with the Dragon. You know, if the Dragon didn't make it to a free press port, nobody would have known about what you've talked about. And
right, there was a ship, the Lucky Dragon, a Japanese fishing
boat.
That
yeah,
was,
you can talk
irradiated.
About that. You've talked about it. I know you know. So here's the parallel. History does repeat itself, and if we let them send the equivalent of the Ambassador Hotel back to Japan, that can only tell you that they just want to cover this thing up, and they want to dismiss these people and just consider them to be expendable. And it's heartbreaking. Charles,
it is heartbreaking. Actually, Charles,
like,
do you want to jump in?
We've been working
seven days a week to try
to get this filing done by February 6th, which happened to have been, would have been President Ronald Wilson Reagan, Mr. GE. He would have been 103. So,
yeah, we have 5 minutes. Real quickly, Charles.
Yeah, but let me leave you with one thought from your audience, and that is the words of one of our plaintiffs, age 22. And he writes in a declaration that we had filed with the court the following: upon my return from Operation Tomodachi, I began losing my eyesight. I lost all vision in my left eye and most vision in my right eye. I'm unable to read street signs and no longer able to drive. Prior to Operation Tomodachi, I had 20/20 eyesight, wore no glasses, and had no corrective eye surgery. Additionally, I know of no known family members who've had leukemia.
Now, we also have had one, at least one of your plaintiffs is a was pregnant at the time as a crew member of the Reagan, yeah. And then her child was born 7 months later with multiple deformities. Is this the only instance of this that you've had?
That is the only birth defect client that we have now, that particular child. Yes, indeed. She was a deck handler, and she was pregnant, and 8 months later,
she didn't know. Charles and Harvey, she didn't know she was pregnant at the time. She didn't knowingly expose.
But that, but no, she didn't. And we don't know if the Navy would have let her go or not. But
deformities. Let's set the record straight, okay? The kid doesn't have a head like you see from the Chernobyl babies or anything. It's a little more subtle at her age, but they're there. It's real. We're not making this stuff up. Thank
no, you,
you
couldn't.
So much.
And I'm going to have to, Charles, and
if you want to get involved, we'll post a copy of the complaint there as soon as we can get our website.
What is the website? Tell me the website again.
FukushimaRadiationVictims.net.
All right, FukushimaRadiationVictims.net.
Charles, me, our investigator there, we're here to help you. If you were in Operation Tomodachi, we are your true friends, not your government, not the VA, and certainly not TEPCO at this point.
All right, we are
in
out of time. Charles and Paul, Paul Garner, Charles Bonner, thank you so much. Steve Simmons. This has been, we've been talking about the USS Ronald Reagan, the Fukushima exposure victim at this point in time. There will be a posting of their filing, which is an incredibly important filing for people to look at. Unfortunately, the toll among American sailors continues to grow. Clearly, this ship was heavily radiated during the Fukushima accident, and the Tokyo Electric Power Company is refusing to take any responsibility whatsoever. And with that, we're going to have to wrap up. This has been a devastating hour. Soarutopia Green Power Wellness Hour. Thank you so much, Paul, Charles, and Steve. And we will continue to cover the story of the Ronald Reagan, the unlucky dragon of the Fukushima disaster. We will see you next week at the Soarutopia Green Power Wellness Show. Do look up these filings, and we'll talk about this some more. Take care.
Thank you, Harvey. You are a true Tomodachi.
I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Soarutopia, Soarutopia, Soarutopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Soarutopia all over God's green world.
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Soarutopia, Soarutopia, Soarutopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Soarutopia all over God's green world.
Will we multiply? We needed more. The rich got rich, the poor got sore. The fuel ran scarce, the price jumped high, and so they gave nuclear power a try. But
don't you know we're gonna have a Soarutopia, Soarutopia.